From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Dale Thronberry.
Good morning and welcome to Veterans Radio. We've got an incredible program for you today. My name is Dale Thronberry and I will be your host. And my air boss today is Bob Gould, 101st Airborne. Good morning, Bobber.
All the way.
We've got many things going on. Today's program is going to be mostly about Iraq and Afghanistan. We've got a number of Iraq-Afghanistan veterans that are going to be on the program. We've got a couple that are going to be in the studio. And if you know of anybody out there who has a story about their experiences in Iraq or Afghanistan, give us a call. The number here at the studio today is 877-573-7825. That's 877-573-7825.
Veterans Radio.
And it's Veterans Radio, and okay. We're going to have, as I said, a couple of things going on. Number one, we're expecting a call from out of the country. And secondly, we're going to have, I see that it looks like we got somebody on the phone right now.
Oh, yes, we do, Dale. For our first for Veterans Radio, we are live from Vietnam.
Okay. Who's on the phone, Bob?
How about Gary Lilly, huh? One of our partners. He's live from Vietnam. Okay.
Hey, good morning, Veterans Radio.
Hey,
it's
Gary.
It's hot and muggy here.
What else is new?
And I'm up north in Hanoi where it's cooler.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So, first time I've ever been in Hanoi, fortunately. And the I wouldn't have wanted to have been here back in '66, but it's a crazy city. Dale, now you were in an Asian city on R&R, I believe.
No, that wasn't me. I didn't do that. I went to Hawaii.
All right, you did too. There's a big picture of you here. And if you remember, brakes are optional. And a horn is mandatory.
Yes.
And the street is preferable, but not required. The sidewalk will do, too.
I want to remind our listeners here that I'm talking to my partner, one of our partners, Gary Lilly, who is in Hanoi, Republic of Vietnam, today, talking to us live and not on a Mars radio station. We're not saying over after everything. And Gary, your impression, of course, is that it's hot and muggy, which is not unusual. How did it feel to go back there 42 years later?
Well, you know what? So far, it doesn't feel like anything other than an interesting trip. But in a few days, we'll be leaving Hanoi and going down south to Hoi An, which is about, 20 kilometers south of Da Nang. And on, I don't even know what day, Tuesday, we'll be going down to Chu Lai, where I was, and hopefully be able to get up to a place called Hill 35, which is between Chu Lai and Tam Kỳ. The Marines and the Seabees, when I was there, it was called Hill 35. Later on, the AmeriCal took over that area of operations, and they called it Fat City. One of the members in our chapter, Richard Totten, said, "Fat City, that was way in the rear." And I said, "Well, you should have been there when it was way in the front."
That's
He came along afterwards. This is insane. I've been doing a lot of recording on your tape recorder, your digital recorder, and I hope to put together a show on it. But, you know, this traffic is insane. I mean, there's no traffic lights. There's a few of them, but they're only considered kind of a suggestion. And there are no stop signs. I've never seen traffic like this. There's motorbikes everywhere, and very few people hit the brakes. Well, they do, but, you know, that's only at the last minute. And you cross the street, and there are cars coming at you, there's motorbikes coming at you from every direction. You have to figure out which horns are the ones that are going to, they're going to miss you by 8-10 inches, you're okay. But the other horns you got to pay attention to are the ones that are giving you imminent danger. They whiz past so fast on streets that are 10 feet wide and crowded, I mean jammed. And these people are just roaring along, laying on the horn, and nobody pays attention. You step out of the way, and hopefully you don't step in front of another one.
Well, that's true.
It is wild here. The sidewalks may be 2 feet wide in places, maybe 6 feet wide, but They also serve as the kitchen, the repair shop, the display place. You know, we live in Ann Arbor where somebody wants to put out outside chairs in front of a restaurant. They've got to go through about 10 levels of bureaucracy. I got to tell you something. These sidewalks here are fair game for anything.
Well, that kind of sounds like Saigon of the late 1960s also. I mean, there weren't any stop signs, and people just kept going and going and going. How's your reception been with the Vietnamese people themselves?
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm still
mostly
there.
Mostly they are very, very friendly. There's been a couple of people, which are younger military-type people that I can understand they may have lost somebody in the war. I mean, we bombed the heck out of Hanoi. 1,040,000 of their soldiers were killed. And so, I'm sure everybody, even the young, were touched by the war. But by and large, it's a great reception, friendly. Even the ones that, probably served in the war, they are respectful. I haven't talked to any of them. Boy, I saw a guy today. You talk about PTSD, sitting in a shop, and he had that look in his eyes, and his foot was twitching like crazy, and I thought, yep, you guys got it too. But it's insane here. Everybody's life seems to be, revolves around making a living, and I don't know what else they do besides that. It's a family affair. Most of the shops, which are usually about 10 feet wide, they've got one or two motor bikes parked inside them, because they can't park anymore on the sidewalk, and their bed is in the back, and they either cook behind the bed or they cook out on the sidewalk. It's a lifestyle that is interesting to look at for a couple of days, but I'm ready to move on, and I sure as heck wouldn't want to live it.
No, we're not used to having that much traffic and crowds around. And my understanding is that the population of Vietnam is pretty much about 80% of it has been born after the war. And so it's probably a very young population.
It's a very young population. That's something I took note of. And and then the hotel, we're in a really nice hotel on, I don't know the name of the street, but it's called the Hotel the Hanoi Elegance Hotel. Just opened a couple of months ago, and $65 a night American. That includes breakfast in the morning, which is delicious. You get a fruit plate on your table when you come in. Incredibly nice rooms, great service, young people. And when I told them, I was here 42 years ago, oh, you were in the military, yes. And they're, wow, this is really neat, they speak, English of different degrees. I know about four or five words of, Vietnamese.
I was going to say, probably not you don't want to use the words that we learned a long time ago, because they probably weren't very nice.
No. Yeah. I bought a same T-shirt.
Oh, there you go. Oh, that's funny.
I heard the hotel manager was checking me in, real friendly and all that, and I don't remember what he was talking about, but he said same, and I thought, I'm back.
Yeah, back. It's all you need to do. Well, we're talking with Gary Lilly, our partner, who is in Hanoi. As we speak, Veterans Radio is truly a worldwide program, and we're very excited that you were able to get through to us, Gary, and I want to thank you and hope that you have a great trip. And I can't wait to hear your recordings and interviews that you do. And we're going to be putting together a program, I guess, is probably sometime in late April or May that we will get that on the air. Thanks very much, Gary. Have a great time.
You bet. And have a great show today.
All right.
See you guys.
To welcome you home again. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
We've been talking to Gary Lilly, a partner of Veterans Radio, and he's been out in Hanoi, and it's been very exciting for us to have our partner over there. And as I mentioned, we're very excited to be able to do a program sometime in the future of the people and recordings that he did while he's there. For the life of me, I guess I understand why people need to go back sometimes.
That was major cool, though.
That was major cool. Kind of threw our schedule off a little bit, but that's all right.
That's okay.
Right now, we're going to be going to our program of the week, is what we've kind of dubbed it, where we're talking about different programs that people are doing out there to help veterans, either older veterans or newer veterans, people coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. So joining me on the line right now is my good friend and our friend at Veterans Radio, Reg Williams. Reg, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Good morning, guys.
How you doing?
I'm doing wonderful.
That was pretty exciting to have Gary on the phone.
Well, I'll say that was neat to hear him from that far away and talking about his experience, and that just is, as you just said, major cool.
It is major cool. And speaking of major cool, Reg, I wanted you to tell our audience about the program that you have started for Iraq and Afghanistan veterans at the University of Michigan. I should point out that Dr. Williams, in this case, is a professor at the University of Michigan in the School of Nursing and Psychiatry. And he has a program specifically designed for returning veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan. Your turn.
Well, Dale, this is a product that really came out of a program of research that we have been doing for a number of years now that I've had funding from the Department of Defense and Tri-Services Nursing Research Program. And we started out with Navy recruits at Great Lakes, where their training occurs at boot camp. And we developed a program that would help these young men and women deal with stress of just being under stress during boot camp, which can be a very stressful experience, as you guys know. In any event, that program that we developed in terms of an intervention to help them really led into the development of internet intervention that we have done that we call Stress Gym. And it's really the idea of just helping young men and women that are in the military to deal with, you know, the daily stresses that they're under, and certainly in combat situations, the god-awful stress that they experience and the traumatic events that they may well experience. So that's what we've done in terms of it. And right now, as it stands, we have a study that we just completed at Naval Hospital in Portsmouth, Virginia, and had Navy sailors that used the program, and I was absolutely delighted with the outcome of that study. It was very positive. We got a lot of very good feedback from the sailors that used it and found it to be very helpful. So that was very encouraging. We now have a grant that we are actually taking what we developed and adapting it for combat casualty patients in the Army, the Navy, Marines, and the Air Force. And so that's where, what we're in the process of actually doing right now.
Okay, and I understand that you are looking for some volunteer participants to help you work out the kinks in this program. Is that true?
Well, what I'm looking for is some folks that are local here in Michigan that could serve as consultants to us. That and we'd love to have a member from each of the services, you know, the Army, the Marines, and the Air Force, and have them that if they've been a combat casualty patient to actually take a look at it and give us feedback on how we're designing it, if it they think it meets the needs. We did conduct a focus group with Army soldiers and Marines, and really got a tremendous understanding of some of their needs and what they experience after they return from Iraq or Afghanistan. And so we have some very useful information in terms of the development of this. But what I'd really like is some individuals that are vets that would be interested in helping us by giving us feedback on the program. So, indeed, I would love to have that.
Okay, and how would they get a hold of you?
Well, what they could do is call my program manager. His name is Gary Gadian, and the number there is 734-764-6872.
734-764-6872. And
you've
got
talking
it. To Gary, and they'll be more than happy to help you out because they need your help. They're putting this program together for the veterans to help them work through the issues that they're carrying around with them right now.
You got it. That's it, Dale. That's it.
Okay.
That's it in a nutshell.
Okay, Reg, thank you so very much for being on Veterans Radio, and we will try and direct some people toward you. It's a worthwhile program, and it's non-threatening because it's all on a computer. You don't get in front of anybody, and you don't have to, you know, tell anything you don't want to tell.
That is right.
That's exactly why
we developed it, to just help these guys to work through the issues that they will sometimes face.
That's true. Thanks very much, Reg. We'll be talking to you soon.
Thank you, Dale, and you guys keep up the great work.
Thank you. Thanks. Okay, that was Reg Williams from the University of Michigan. He's got a program out there that he's developing to try and help the Iraq and Afghanistan veterans work through some of the issues that they will have at some point. And right now we're going to be going to our own Welcome Home segment, and here's Bob.
Thank you, Dale. Welcome home. Each week on Veterans Radio, we welcome home servicemen and women who, in the service of our country, have been stationed around the world. Dateline Concord, New Hampshire. 6 National Guard soldiers, 4 pilots, and 2 flight operations specialists from Detachment 18 were welcomed home at the Army Aviation Support Facility in Concord, New Hampshire. The crew flies the Army's C-12 airplane, transporting passengers and cargo throughout the Middle East. Dateline Kingston, New York. 70 soldiers from the New York State's Army National Guard's 104th Military Police Battalion were welcomed home from a tour of duty in southern Iraq. The 104th Battalion was mobilized in June 2007. Dateline, Eau Claire, Wisconsin. 14 soldiers from the Wisconsin Army Reserve's 397th Engineer Battalion, based out of Eau Claire, Wisconsin, were welcomed home after serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. Welcome Home is sponsored each week by the Marine Scholars Program of Ave Maria University. For more information regarding the Marine Scholar Program, visit them online at avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. That's 239-280-2552. Welcome home.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill. The benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
How many of you are suffering from some kind of chronic pain? If you are, then you're just one of millions of people our age who just live with it. I strongly suggest that you give Quantum Physical Therapy a call at 734-483-9200. Quantum Physical Therapy is a multifaceted facility providing cutting-edge conventional and alternative rehabilitation services. The highly qualified and friendly staff at Quantum are the movement experts and are committed to coming up with a specific solution for your specific problem. Whether it's pain, weakness, swelling, nerve injury, amputation, disease, or age-related morbidity, they can help you lead a productive life. Quantum Physical Therapy has 2 locations, one at 5417 Whitaker Road in Ypsilanti, and the other at 6180 Michigan Avenue in Saline. That's Quantum Physical Therapy, 734-483-9200, or on the web at www.qptherapy.com. And good morning again. We're back on Veterans Radio. It's been an exciting morning so far here. We've been talking to Vietnam. We've talked to Reggie Williams about a program at the University of Michigan for veterans. And right now in our studio, I've got a couple of guests with us. Number one is Zach Leonard. He is from Milan. He's in the Army, still in the Army, recently returned from Iraq. Zach, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you here. And Zach is here in his uniform. And we've been talking about how uniforms have changed over 40 years. He's got all kinds of Velcro stuff you can take off and put back on, which I think is kind of neat. Zach, I wanted to ask you, you are in the Army. What unit were you with?
10th Mountain Division.
Okay. And when did you deploy?
Well, I was a late deployer because I was getting new to the unit. So I deployed in November. And, well, the unit deployed just like a few months before that, like in September, I believe.
Okay. And where were you in Iraq?
Kirkuk. It's a little north of Baghdad.
And we were talking earlier on the program, still trying to figure out for those of us who have never been there how big Iraq actually is. And so we think it's about the size of Texas. We're not sure. Anyway, so what was your job up there in Kirkuk?
Well, I'm in the infantry, so pretty much just patrols and just seek and destroy, I guess I could, is the best way to describe it.
Okay, you mentioned that you did a lot of your work at night.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. We worked a lot at night. The only time we went out during the day was if we had some kind of a care package to give to the towns around us. Besides that, it was mostly at night.
How was the interaction with the Iraqi population?
From what I saw, it was all good. We never had any like confrontations with the civilians at all. We take care of, we try our hardest to make that, let them see that we're there to help them, and so they don't, they are actually, I'm glad to see that they're finally starting to see that, mm-hmm. and helping us out with certain things, and it's actually starting to just, it's amazing to me, honestly.
Okay, so you see a pretty positive thing going on over there right now.
Definitely.
Unfortunately, your tour was cut a little short. Could you talk to me a little bit about what happened?
Well,
as much as you want to, that's fine.
Long story short, got shot on a typical mission. You know, we were going to get some guys, and they didn't want to be taken, so they started shooting at us from their windows in their house. And there was a lot of us that got shot that night, but luckily we all made it back. So.
Okay, and you were shot in the thigh?
Yeah, in the thigh and the other side of my right leg.
But did it go right through both?
Oh, yeah. I was taking a knee, so it went through my left leg and into my right leg and into the ground behind me. I just got real lucky.
I would say that got kind of close to some important stuff there.
Oh yeah.
but I know, and you had mentioned earlier that the care that you received has been excellent.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, from the time I got hit, even as soon as I got to Balad, they're just, you know, it was amazing. I couldn't believe that how well, I mean, clean and everything. I was amazed.
And you also came back and you went through Walter Reed. This is kind of to dispel some rumors about Walter Reed. Tell me about that experience a little.
I honestly, I'm going back there in just a few days, but I really liked Walter Reed. It was, you know, I've heard a lot of things about Walter Reed. When I got there, you know, despite all the rumors, it's a great hospital. Mm-hmm. I mean, the care is just amazing. And, I mean, I don't know, I absolutely just couldn't imagine a better hospital.
And you are intending on staying in the Army, is that correct?
Oh, yes, definitely. I'm trying to get back, hopefully, to my unit by June. Depending on how well my leg does, I'm trying to get by at least by June, July.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of mad that I missed the going from the cold to the hot part of the year.
Oh, so, I don't know if you want to. You may regret that.
I just wish I could have stayed there to get used to the weather instead of jumping from being cold to hot automatically. Because mm-hmm. July gets like 120 in there up there. So.
Right. Yeah. The people we have talked to, and in fact, I want to thank you very much for sharing that. We've got another guest in our studio who is also, I don't know when you got back, Josh, but we're talking with Josh Hayes. And Josh, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm honored to be sitting along with you guys.
It's an honor to have you here. Also, can you tell me a little bit about what branch you were in and what your job was?
Traditionally National Guard. I moved up to Michigan in 03, joined ALF Company of the 125th Infantry out of Detroit, and got mobilized with Bravo Company out of Saginaw.
Mm-hmm.
We were attached to a brigade out of Pennsylvania and went overseas as an infantryman.
Okay, and you were there when?
We, let's see, gosh. We went overseas in June of 05, and I was wounded and evacuated in October of that year.
Okay, can you tell us what happened to
sure.
you?
Yeah, we were rolling out on a raid. We had a little bit of intel on some guys that were going to be moving through the area. Had a couple places we thought they would be located during the day. They tend to kind of hunker down in the daylight hours and then travel mm-hmm. more at night. We thought we had a few spots where they might be. We were going out to check those out. I think it was pretty obvious we were coming out, and they had set up an ambush site for us.
Oh.
We had an IED explosive set off against our vehicle, hit our vehicle and the one in front of it, disabled our truck, tore up the front end pretty good, and caused us to run into a Bradley. And we were doing probably about 60 miles an hour at the time. So we had a pretty good secondary.
Yeah,
impact.
I would say.
And then, of course, got rear-ended as a result of the confusion and, mm-hmm. and the dust. And, I mean, I'm sure you experienced, too, with the IEDs over there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when that goes off, it's not just the smoke. It's not just the blast. It's the dust kicks up off everything.
Oh, yeah.
You know, 100 meters, you can't see a thing. You know,
oh, okay.
And the guys were trying to creep through the kill zone to get out of harm's way and possibly help us out, and just ended up, you know, we were stopped in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Mm-hmm. And what happened to you?
Oh, luckily, the cab stopped almost all the shrapnel. We hit mainly most of my injuries were from bouncing around inside the truck. I had lost a lot of tissue on the front of my left leg. Had some torn ligaments in my ankle and my thumb, head injury. That's, I guess, busted on my face a little bit, broken bones and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But
well,
nothing terribly serious.
Mm-hmm. And are you still in the guard? Is there a possibility of you be going back again? Or
I am. Actually, I've been on medical hold for the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. I've been finishing up my medical appointments, finishing up my rehabilitation. I just completed my medical hold for the Army, so I'll be released back to the National Guard. I'm going to have to be reassigned. I will no longer be able to perform duties of an infantryman.
Okay.
So I will be finding a new specialty, but my plan is to stay with the Guard. My enlistment runs through December. If I hold up pretty well, I'm looking at extending. Not 100% sure, mm-hmm. so we're just going to have to see how things go.
That's understandable. And what was your rank in the Guard?
Specialist.
Specialist. Okay. Yeah. And I guess, where were you in Iraq?
We were about halfway between Ramadi and Fallujah. It's a little town called Havanaya.
I was going to say, a lot of places we've heard about in the news. And your duties there were similar to what Zach had to do?
Yeah, very similar, it sounds. We did a lot of, we do presence patrols during the days. Mm-hmm. We did a lot of our raids. We conducted a few of them at nighttime, a lot of them during the day.
Mm-hmm.
We probably did a lot more. Well, it sounds like we probably did a lot more daytime operations.
Oh, yeah,
than what you guys were doing.
We would do a lot at night and with Blackhawks. That's my our air assault missions are my favorite. That's,
yeah,
oh, absolutely love that.
That's the stuff, man.
Well, as a former helicopter pilot, I can tell you they were pretty exciting for me too. Even at night in the old Hueys, especially their night insertions.
Oh yeah, it's like a game with those with the night vision eyes. It's just like a video game. I love it.
I got to tell you, I'm envious that I never got to do any of that overseas. I did a lot of training in that stateside. My old unit was air assault, but yeah, I'm envious. But
that's all right. I'm just getting a cue here. What we're running up, we got about 2 minutes until we come up to the bottom of the hour, and so you guys can just talk amongst yourselves. I think it's fascinating. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We're talking with two veterans in our studio that were, you know, both wounded in Iraq. Both are sound like they're still anxious to get back there, or you know, at least stay, you know, with their units and stay in the military. And I'm very pleased to hear that. What was your experience as far as your treatment was concerned when you were wounded? And did you come straight home, or did you go to Germany? Or how did that work for you?
I came through Blood, the air base there, and then up to Germany. I actually got held in Germany for a little while. They because of my injuries, my bone was exposed. There was a real bad risk of infection.
Oh, man.
There's a possibility of it being infected already, and they decided to go ahead and do surgery there. Excuse me. To try to address that and prevent infection.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a little bit late coming back from the rest of the guys, but eventually caught up with them all. We ended up going through Fort Gordon in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And that was where I did most of my medical treatment, or I guess acute care, with mm-hmm. the military. One of the differences in the active duty and the reserve component is that, you know, we don't have a home base to go home to, so
right.
We don't have a home duty site
mm-hmm.
that's at a military facility, per se. So instead of us being, like me, to being down at Fort Gordon in Georgia for 2 years completing my rehab and, you know, being 1,000 miles away from home, the Army's worked out a program. It's a CBHCO, Community-Based Healthcare Organization. I was assigned to that.
I'm going to have to cut you
sure.
off just a second.
Sure thing.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Major Oscar Miller, although wounded several times, encouraged his troops to press the attack. Details after this.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
After 2 days of intense physical and mental strain, during which Miller had led his battalion in the front line of the advance through the forests of Argonne, the enemy was met in a prepared position. Though almost exhausted, he energetically reorganized his battalion and ordered an attack. Upon reaching open ground, the advancing line began to waver in the face of machine gun fire from the front and flanks and direct artillery fire. Personally leading his command group forward between his frontline companies, Miller inspired his men by his personal courage, and they again pressed on toward the hostile position. As he led the renewed attack, he was shot in the right leg, but he nevertheless staggered forward at the head of his command. Soon afterward, he was again shot in the right arm. But he continued the charge, personally cheering his troops on through the heavy machine gun fire. Just before the objective was reached, he received a wound in the abdomen which forced him to the ground. But he continued to urge his men on, telling them to push on to the next ridge and leave him where he lay. He died from his wounds a few days later. If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans' Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Pat the Handyman and his team is ready to help you with your remodeling, repair, and painting projects. Call Pat the Handyman at 734-260-1158. That's 260-1158. Pat the Handyman is a veteran-owned business.
Len Pitlack, CPA, is an award-winning consultant for the U.S. Small Business Development Center. Let him use his 25 years' experience to bring you, as an individual or small business owner, his professional and courteous tax and accounting services. Give Len Pitlack a call today at 734-993-1313.
Schrader Yacht Sales, the East Coast's finest dealer of Chris Craft, Island Packet Yachts, Packet Craft, Parker Fishing Boats, and Nautic Star Boats. Schrader Yachts is located at the top of Barnicot Bay in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. Our good friend Ray Schrader provides you, the customer, with over 30 years' experience in boat sales, sail and power boats, both new and used. Schrader Yacht Sales offers a full-service storage facility and a reliable crew responsible for all of your boating needs. Specialists in electronics, they can accommodate your needs for radar, autopilot, air conditioning, GPS, heat, and communications. Give Ray a call at 732-899-8010. That's 732-899-8010, or go to SchraderYachts.com. That's SchraderYachts.com. Oh, by the way, tell Ray you heard about him on Veterans Radio, and he will personally deliver your new boat from Schrader Yachts anywhere there's water. Schrader Yachts, ready to serve all of your boating needs. And we're back on Veterans Radio, and we're talking with a number of veterans, appropriately, from Iraq. In the studio, we've got Zach Leonard with us and also Josh Hayes. And Josh was just telling us about his experience of coming home after he'd been wounded. His vehicle got hit by an IED, and then it sounded like they had a little bit of a traffic backup as they ran into each other. But he got out. And because it's a different story, because you are in the Guard, that you mentioned that you had a home-based type of medical care.
Yes, sir.
Community-based, excuse me.
Once I finished with my original, basically, acute care there at the hospital and was released from the hospital, I was released for a certain amount of time for convalescent leave to recover from surgery. And after a while, I was assigned to this community-based healthcare organization. The CBHCO allows us to work out of the local armories, local reserve component units, use local facilities, and use civilian-based healthcare.
Okay.
Which is fantastic. I got to come back. I'm 15 minutes away. Got to use the University of Michigan, mm-hmm. The VA here in Ann Arbor. So I got to see kind of both sides of it, and the biggest thing for me is allowed me to get some of the best health care I could and still be home with my family.
I think that's great. In fact, we're going to be talking more about that on next week's Veterans Radio as we talk with some of the people that are running those programs for you.
Wonderful.
Josh, I wanted to thank you. Joining me on the line right now from Chicago, where it's probably got a little bit more snow than we do right now, is Robert, excuse me, not Robert. It is Robert Smith. Robert, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hey, how are you?
I am fine. Thank you very much. Sorry we kept you on hold for so long. But as you could tell, it's kind of an interesting thing going on here with a number of different Iraqi veterans.
You bet.
Yeah. Welcome home to you, too.
Thank you.
Tell me about what branch of the service you were in and what your rank was.
I'm in Army, active Army. I'm a captain. I've done two tours. My first tour was with the Michigan Army National Guard. It was Fox Company, 425th Infantry. I was there from February 04 to February 05. And I just got back from my second tour. I was a MIT, which is a military transition team. I was in Iraq November 06 to November 07.
Well, and where were you in Iraq?
On my first tour, I was in Abu Ghraib, the prison. And then...
That's a whole other show.
Oh, yeah. I was there when that broke out. That was an exciting time. And the second tour, I was in southern Baghdad, in the Arab Jubor, Tigris River Valley area.
Okay. And what were your responsibilities there?
As a MIT team, I was the ground commander. The MIT team's an 11-man team, which we are assigned to an Iraqi light infantry battalion. And we are their advisors, their mentors. We train them. We take them out. Whatever they do, we do with them. And it was a very challenging tour. You know, we went through 3 months training at Fort Riley, Kansas. And I got to say, what they briefed us on and what they trained us for actually did, you know, bear fruit. That's what did happen.
It actually worked.
They designed the training to be very frustrating, and they actually brought in real Iraqis, Iraqi Americans, and it was a very challenging experience. I grew a lot from it, and you know, in retrospect, I'm glad I did it. But there were many times I, you know, pulled my hair out. It was a tough assignment.
I can imagine that it was. And where are you stationed right now?
I'm on Louisville, Kentucky, just south of Fort Knox. I'm ACRC, which is I'm an advisor now to a reserve component unit. It's 7th Battalion, 340th, CSS. But they are mobilized, so we're basically TDY 10 months of the year.
Oh, okay. And you mentioned that you just got back last fall.
Right.
Are you anticipating having to go back again?
Oh, I'm sure I will. I got this for about a year and a half, 2 years, and then I'll move back to Fort Knox, where I'll take command, and I'm sure it's just a matter of time, you know.
Okay. It sounds like you are career.
Yeah, I'm going to retire. I had a long break in service. I was in 82 to 90, and I got out for almost 14 years.
Oh.
And, you know, like a lot of guys with 9/11, you know, I signed back up. I went to Michigan Army National Guard and went over there, and I decided to put my active duty packet back in. And here I am.
Oh, well, we thank you for your service to our country and greatly appreciate that. I'm going to ask you to hold on while I bring on one other guest that's out there, and that's Brandon Hauser. Brandon, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to have you on. Tell me a little bit about you, your branch of the service and rank.
I was a corporal with the Marine Corps. I was with 2nd Battalion, 4th Marines at a Camp Pendleton with 1st Marine Division.
And where were you stationed in?
I was in Ramadi. From February of 04 to September of 04.
Wow. And can you tell me a little bit about what your mission was there?
Well, we arrived there pretty much a year after the initial invasion over there, and our objective was SASO operations, stability operations and security operations over there. So basically trying to... the forefront of what's going on now of trying to help the Iraqi people get on back on their feet and help train their security forces to eventually take over and everything. But it ended up turning into a little bit different operation after we arrived there, so we ended up doing more combat missions than we did anything else.
Well, it sounded like that the Marines always... Actually, in this whole thing, is like everybody over there seems to be in the middle of everything. It doesn't really make any difference what branch of the service that you're in. But did you do the one tour, or did you have to go back again?
Oh, well, I kind of I lucked out in that situation. I joined 6 months before 9/11, and so my discharge date out of the Marine Corps was of April of 05. So I spent a year in Okinawa, Japan, and I only had to do one tour over there. So, and that was towards the end of my enlistment. So when I got back, I just basically got ready to get out of the Marine Corps. So,
my understanding is you never get out of the Marine Corps.
Well, active duty wise, anyways.
I understand that. We were talking here in the studio, and you two feel free to join in about the climate in Iraq, and I want our listeners, we're talking, you know, you're listening to Veterans Radio, and we're talking with four veterans of tours in Iraq, and they were there at different times. And so I'm going to start off with Zach. Zach, you trained with the 10th Mountain Division out of Fort Drum, New York, I believe it is, mm-hmm. and you were pretty much trained for winter fighting.
Right. I mean, we assumed we were going to Afghanistan because, I mean, with 10th Mountain, there's mountains there, you know, and the weather is a little bit more like the weather in New York. Well, when we got told we were going to Iraq, I was like, oh, wow. I mean, it's going to be just gonna be hot. We get there, and it's about 80 degrees, nice in Kuwait. And then we get up to northern Iraq, and it starts to get just cold. Every day, you know, we had to get new cold weather gear and everything for it. And it ended up snowing about two or three times while I was there, and it's just rain every day during this time of year, mm-hmm. is the rainy season. So it's northern Iraq especially, because we're up by the mountains, and mm-hmm. then it's just really, it was cold, actually cold. Like, we had to scrape the frost off the windows of our Humvees and stuff.
Oh, I never would imagine. You also mentioned before that kind of snow followed you wherever you went.
Right.
You said you went down, you did some training down in Fort Polk, Louisiana, mm-hmm. which is where I did my basic training. And all I can remember is hot and armadillos and bugs and things along those lines. And you said it snowed there.
Oh, yeah. We got down there. They got down there and it just snowed. Like, for the first time, I forgot how long they said it had been, but it snowed for the first time in quite some time while they were there. And that just cracked me up. It's like everywhere we go, snow follows.
Well, I want to thank you, Zach, because you're obviously the one that brought this 8 inches of snow that we got last night here in Michigan. And Josh, I'm going to ask you about the weather where you were in Iraq. Yours was a little bit different, I think.
Yeah, actually, we mobilized out of Michigan on the 5th of February, and it was snowing. And we land in Camp Shelby to train down in Mississippi, and it's like 40, 60 degrees, something like that, and raining, you know, miserable. When we left, it was, you know, right in the beginning, middle of summer, and it was like 65, 70 degrees. Get on the plane, flew up to Maine, flew out to Ireland, you know, about 60 degrees both places. Get on the plane, nice 72 degrees. And as we landed, the pilot told us that it was 138 degrees with 40 mile an hour wind. And it was like stepping out into a hair dryer.
Oh, I've heard that analogy before. And of course, you always, you know, you have all your gear on, and you know, the Army never lets you roll up your sleeves, or whatever. But,
it's amazing though how quickly you get used to the heat. I mean, it's mm-hmm. You know, it within a week or two we were fairly well acclimated. You know, you still do have to roll. I mean, you got to leave your sleeves down. You got to, you know, you can open up a little bit for ventilation, but you've got to maintain that secure posture. You know,
mm-hmm.
And it was interesting how when it started to drop to mid 70s and into the upper 60s, how guys were starting to run around with their sweaters on, and guys were putting on sweatpants and stuff because it was, you know, gosh, it's 60 degrees. That's just...
That's cold.
Yeah.
We're coming up on a break at 45 after the hour, but I wanted to ask you, you mentioned 138 degrees during the day, which I can't fathom. And I'd heard that analogy of standing in front of the world's most powerful hair dryer. And then, you know, in addition to that, let's throw up some sand at the
yeah.
same time so we can get sand in parts that, you know, sand doesn't belong.
Those sandstorms are fun.
Yeah, and I think a lot of folks don't know that in Kuwait and Saudi, the sand there is like what you'd expect, like beach sand.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get up into Iraq, it's almost like talcum powder. You know, it's
right.
very, very
it's like
fine,
chalk.
Like ash. Yeah,
oh, it's like okay. taking two erasers from a chalkboard and hitting them together. And that's brown. It's like walking on the moon.
Yeah. Well, we'll continue this thing on the weather and the train in Iraq in just a moment. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
Dairy Lily and Associates is now Sperry Van Ness Lily and Associates, the newest Michigan affiliate of a leader in the commercial real estate industry, Sperry Van Ness. More than 800 Sperry Van Ness advisors in 136 markets sold nearly $11 billion in commercial real estate last year. That was done by putting the client's interest first, thereby generating maximum return for every property. When we list a property, we immediately place it on 6 internet commercial listing services and email it to 40,000 prospective buyers and 60,000 commercial brokers. We offer to split the commission 50-50. That means your interests, not ours, are placed first. To learn more, call Sperry Van Ness Lilly & Associates Commercial Realtors at 800-345-6694. That's 800-345-6694. Be advised, there is a difference.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
Now we're back on Veterans Radio talking with four veterans of the war in Iraq, and we're going to have somebody on from Afghanistan, but we weren't able to do that today. I'm going to ask each of you in turn, and I'm going to start off with you, Captain Smith, to tell me about one of the most unusual experiences that you had while you were in Iraq. I didn't mean to blindside you with that, so I'll just keep babbling while you get a chance to think about it. An unusual experience that you had there.
Well, I guess there's several, actually. When the Abu Ghraib prison scandal broke out, I was watching it on the news as it was developing. And I was talking to a couple of guys that we worked together as a team. And I said, hey, guys, I think this is us. And I'm watching these pictures. I said, I've gone on tours of these of the facilities there. And at the time, we had no idea what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a couple of days later, Dan Rather was out front, and the press went wild. And it was a challenging time. We were scared. We didn't know what was going on. Of course, the mortar, the rocket attacks increased dramatically.
Oh, I would think.
The Iraqis let us know that they were not pleased with that.
Mm-hmm. How big is the Abu Ghraib facility?
I think it's like 244 acres, if I recall. It's completely encamped. It was built by the British, I believe, back in the early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And it was solidly built.
How many prisoners were being held there?
Oh, I don't remember. I'm going to say, 2,000 or 3,000, I would say.
Okay.
It went from the day when we first got there, we were putting the sandbags on their head. That was an expedient way of doing it. I don't think it was doing anything cruel.
Mm-hmm.
But as time went on, especially my second tour, when we started bringing in the detainees, they were treated with a lot more respect, and we handled with kid gloves.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, we learned a lesson from that.
Oh, sure. Sure. I think that probably... I'm not going to make a comment on that. I think the idea is when you first went in, some people weren't necessarily trained. They didn't know exactly what to expect. I think that would probably be the issue. We didn't know what your expectations were and how many prisoners you were going to have. And, things didn't turn out to be quite as easy as they thought they were going to be. And, going from
Absolutely.
There.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Brandon, as a Marine, what would you say was an unusual experience that you had?
I don't even know where to begin.
I know the whole thing was unusual. You can see everybody's kind of going, oh, unusual. Well, let's see. I was sleeping on the ground, right?
Yeah. Well, what I thought was unusual is that, where my company was based out in Ramadi, because we had all of our companies were based at different parts in the city. And our base actually used to be Saddam Hussein's intelligence base, where who knows what he'd done to people at that base and whatever. Experience-wise, I can't even begin to could be here on here all day long telling you unusual stories.
Well,
like I said, I don't even know where to begin on those.
Well, we'll have to have a continuation of this program because I think it's important. When we talked to Reg Williams at the beginning of the program about his work on trying to help veterans, you know, reacclimate back to civilian life, and one of the things that he has taught me is that it's important for you guys and guys and women to tell your stories, to tell people, you know, if they ask, as long as you're comfortable with them, you know, tell them. Because we have a tendency to lock them away, and these are an important part of our lives. They're never going to go away. They're always going to be there, and I think it's important. I'm going to turn to you, Zach, and ask for your unusual experience there.
Well, actually, I have a few things to say. One story I like to tell is the night that I got shot, we were in a small town, and the town hadn't had any... The people who we went there to get were... We're just terrorizing the whole town, and we had intel came in from our special forces counterparts. They came with us that night. They had we went there to go get these guys because this town was just, you know, just being terrorized. And so when we went there, the guys, you know, they did what they did. We did what we did. They ended up not being alive anymore. But about 4 o'clock in the morning, and the Spectre gunship shooting off and everything. We just woke up the whole town, and you know, we assumed that the whole town would just be like outraged by this happening right next door, right? Well, I heard from my captain, who had also got wounded that night. He told me that the company went back without us the next day to do a damage assessment, and the people finally, for like the first time, were coming out of their houses and we're shaking the soldiers' hands and thanking them for killing those guys because they were just, you know, the kids couldn't go outside for, you know, they were going to get shot.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't go to the store, you couldn't go outside at all. And even one of the guys that we ended up killing that night, his parents lived in that same town, and they came out and apologized for their son being the way he was. And people in the States, for the most part, don't hear that part. And I like to tell people that because that's how things are starting to actually accept us and understand that we're there to help.
I think that's an important point to bring out, and I appreciate that. I'll come back to you.
Well,
I just got one more.
Well, another thing was, we were driving through Huija, which is a town, like, it's a terrible town, to our west, but we were driving through, and we noticed a couple of kids with AK-47s. And I don't know how the front gunner didn't shoot them, because it was a miracle that he didn't, because they ended up being toy AK-47s. And as we go through the town more and more, we keep on seeing more and more toy AK-47s. And, you know, they're acting like they're shooting at us. And what we finally gathered from that is that the terrorists that were living in that town were handing out toy AK-47s to the kids, hoping that we would take a shot at one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, they would win the town over us.
Right.
And that was one thing that really upset me, is the fact that they would, you know, give these toy guns to kids, not caring that they get shot, you know, just so that the town hates us.
Speaking of a crying child, so he's got one out there. Josh, what about you? Your unusual experience?
Well, actually, you stole my thunder a little bit.
Okay.
I had one kind of similar to the first one. That was what popped into my head. But I'll tell you, the most unusual thing for me was, we train so hard to be disciplined. We train so hard to keep ourselves secure, to protect ourselves and our brothers. And it was right after I was wounded. I actually blacked out for a little bit. I got out of the truck. I was blacked out for a little while longer. But they got us loaded up to medevac us out. And we're in this truck, the armor plating around the sides, being driven out into the hospital, and for the first time, I felt just truly vulnerable, you know, because I was hearing, we were ambushed on the way in, and we were hearing some small arms fire on the way out, and all of a sudden, it came to me that, you know, that there was a real chance of death, there was a real chance of getting injured, and up until that point, I don't know if it was if it's training, if it's personality, but up until that point, I had never considered that. And I don't know if maybe I just put it back in the back of my mind and never let it come to bear, but it was, you know, that was the first time I was truly afraid.
That sounds very familiar because, whatever war that you're involved with, you know, your training is so good and so thorough, and you're just, I'm not going to use the word. Well, you are. You think that you're invincible, plus you're 20 years old or younger, and, you know, most of us don't think anything is ever going to happen to us, and then it happens either to us or it happens to a comrade, and we go, okay, something else kicks in our brain and goes, hey, I could get hurt doing this, but it's not going to stop you from doing your job, but maybe you're going to watch somebody a little bit closer. And I can't imagine that people did not shoot somebody with those fake guns.
That was luck. I couldn't believe that he didn't. Because, I mean, I thought if I was gunning that first truck, it would have been,
luck and discipline.
I think that's important for our audience to listen, to know about that. Many of our listeners are civilians and are not familiar with the training that you do have. Is that, you know, it's not that you shoot and think later. It's you're trying to do both at the same time. Would you agree?
Absolutely. A lot of our time was spent on target recognition.
Oh, mm-hmm. Definitely. Yep.
You know, shoot and no shoot targets. I mean, you know, we spent, I can't tell you how many hours on ranges just thinking about that.
Well, Captain Smith, it sounds like you were kind of involved in some of that training that went along with that. Was that not an issue when you were there?
Oh, that was definitely an issue as well, and more prevalent on the second tour. Target recognition was crucial, and I think the Army recognized that, and we moved forward, in my opinion, under General Petraeus. We're identifying, you know, there's an insurgency, and I think we're taking the right steps. That's part of it, and not to alienate ourselves with the local population.
I think that's really important. I have a couple of students in a class that I teach that are veterans, and we were talking about interpersonal communication. It sounds so silly when you're talking about that. But the whole thing is that he told me that the symbol to stop in Iraq is not to put your hand up like a policeman, you know, like we're used to, you know, stop, don't come by me. It is to put your hand up almost like waving them toward you instead of, you know, the opposite way. And he said there were a lot of people that got shot as a result of them not stopping because, you know, we're doing our symbol. And I think that probably has changed, too. Everybody's nodding their head in here. It's kind of interesting. But it is important to think about that, the understanding of their culture. And I think we have a much better understanding. Unfortunately, it's 5 years out.
Right.
But at least we're learning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not being that way. Brandon, I wanted to ask you again if you've had a chance to think about, what about the conditions there? Did you get everything that you needed?
Yeah, pretty much we did. We were assigned everything we needed personalized, you know, all of our protective gear that we had. We got brand new A4s at the time, M60 A4s and everything, and the only thing we didn't have when we first got over there were armored Humvees. We had a jimmy rig our Humvees with armor, and we didn't get up armored Humvees until well after halfway through our tour over there. That was about the only thing. I think pretty much now everybody, you don't have to really worry about that anymore. But when we first went over there, you know, we brought all of our own Humvees from Camp Pendleton, and none of them were up to speed with what was going on over there, I guess.
Okay. Well, so, I'm sorry to have to cut you off, but we are running out of time again. This is why we need to have 2-hour shows. I want to thank all of you, Brandon Hauser, former current Marine, but out of the Marines right now. Captain Robert Smith, thank you so very much. Josh Hayes in the studio. Zach Leonard, thank you so very much for being on Veterans Radio.
It was nice being here.
We're going to try and get you guys back on again at some time in the future.
I'll have to call you from Iraq.
All right, we'll do that. We wish you all well. I don't have time to thank our sponsors, but we want to thank everybody out there for listening to Veterans Radio. And until next week, you are dismissed.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of our guests and are not necessarily those of Veterans Radio or this station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.